Hi folks, welcome to the Money 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 podcast. I'm Surabhi Upadhyay and we come to you every week with some very interesting conversations to help you get your personal finances in order and get smart with your money. We celebrate 14th of November as Children's Day every year. While parents have big dreams for a bright future for their child, realizing some of these dreams needs some planning. Creating a corpus can go a long way in ensuring that your child gets the security and the opportunities that he or she deserves. The insurance industry offers products called child plans. Now, are these products worth investing in? What are the costs involved? What are the expected returns that you should have in mind? And should you actually look at only child plans offered by the insurance sector or also consider plain vanilla mutual funds? These are some of the issues that we're going to be discussing on this week's show. My guests are Mahavir Chopra, Chief Business Officer at CoverFox, and also Amit Kukreja, SEBI Registered Investment Advisor and founder of financial planning firm AmitKukreja.com. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining in. This is an important topic and one that does lay the emphasis on long-term planning. So let me start with you, Amit. First thoughts, creating a corpus for your child. It's very enticing when you have all these fancy ads talking about child plans that you should invest in as a responsible parent. What do you think?
I think any financial planning that you do for your child's education is like a normal financial goals planning that you would do for any other financial goals that you establish in your life. So planning for child's education or wedding and choosing a product to accumulate that corpus is a regular stuff in your financial planning exercise. So nothing different about it. The only thing that I think comes especially with this term child plan is that the emotional connotation, you know, when you're looking and buying something as a child plan, you're actually thinking, visualizing how your child will be using this money to qualify for his educational milestone or use that money to basically become a graduate or a postgraduate subject matter expert or using that money to get married. So, it just has a emotional value attached to the terminology, but otherwise it's like a regular financial goal that you would do for any other life goals and planning for them.
Okay, Mahavir, let's get your opening thoughts because you do end up getting a little confused about how these products are constructed, how are they wrapped around, what would your first initial thought be?
Sure, so the thing is that look at today's costs of getting a child educated, right? So the costs are mounting. Every year that you see, the costs are mounting. I just had a discussion with one of my very, very close colleagues who's getting his child educated in Canada. He's almost spending close to around $300,000 in the next 4 years to educate his child on some graduation in political science. So the kind of costs that are getting incurred, it's this is a crazy amount of cost, right? It's around 1.5 crores that you're going to spend, which is today's cost. Now, if you put inflation on this, it becomes even more expensive.
First question that's going to come to your mind is that if you are going to have a requirement, let's say 18 years down the line or 20 years down the line for your child, should you build a corpus in the first place or just take a simple plain vanilla education loan, right? Amit, some people will counter argue that because you get the income tax benefit on it as well. And perhaps it's a simpler way to think rather than get so worked up and worried about this massive corpus today.
So, absolutely. I mean, the figure that Mahavir is quoting for a higher education abroad is very close to it. When I do my financial planning, I take about 40 lakhs a year for a four-year program if the child is going through a graduation program at an Ivy League college. That adds up to 1 crore 60 lakhs a year. And if you add on top of it the inflation in education as well as the rupee dollar depreciation, then it potentially can become 2 crores, 2.5 crores, 5-6 years down the line. So you need to be adequately prepared. Very clearly, if you're not able to fund all of this money, absolutely you go for the education loan. And you must go for the education loan for a primary reason that I would like to highlight here is that how do you build the child's financial quotient? You need to help the child understand the cycle of earning, spending, saving, investing, paying the EMIs, understanding inflation, understanding a little bit of a foreign currency and Indian currency relationship, and how do we adequately plan for that?
Okay, so I guess, yes, you have to do a mix and match. Part of that requirement can be met through via an education loan when the child turns 21. But it's always good to have something that the parent has already created. Now, again, if we just were to rework the numbers, you were saying that if let's say we're working with a corpus of 50, I know at 1.5 crores can be a daunting number, so I don't want to scare people off. So if we say we want to build a 50 lakh corpus, in today's prices, we want to build a 50 lakh corpus for a child graduating out at, let's say, 21. With inflation, what does that number come to, and how do we even start?
So the last time I calculated this, let's say if you're taking a child who is, let's say, 2 years old today, and the father is, let's say, around 30, 31. And if you're looking at a corpus of 50 lakhs today, it will, if you take an inflation of, let's say, 6 to 8%, it will go to around 1.7 crores by the time he becomes around 18 years old. For that, the typical cost that if you even take a kind of a fund which gives you a return of investment around 12%, you'll end up investing around 29,000 rupees a month to be able to achieve that.
That is a sizable monthly investment, considering a pretty good return. 12% CAGR compounding is a very good return, and you might not have all years which offer you this kind of a 12%. And still you'll have to set aside almost 29,000?
Yes.
That's a tough one. Okay.
Can you imagine if you, that's what we did. One more math is that if I delay it by another 4 years, so if my child is 2 years old and I do that investment, and if I delay it and let's say do this investment at the age of six, right, this amount almost doubles. It becomes like around 55,000 rupees a month, right? So that's also a very, very figure that makes us nervous.
So, Mahavir, now let's straight away get to child plans, which are offered by life insurance companies.
Correct.
I'm guessing all of these are types of ULIPs.
Yes.
How are they different from regular ULIPs? Advantages, disadvantages? Because ULIPs have been a bad name for a very long period of time.
Right. Yeah, so let me start with the bad name thing. Insurance companies have obviously taken have understood this part, that ULIPs are, you know, something which has become like a bad name in the industry. Typically, financial planners or anybody in the industry typically talks bad about mutual fund about ULIPs against mutual funds. The point is that ULIPs have been, the insurance companies have been trying to work on this and typically reduce all the disadvantages that were there earlier and come out with customer-centric plans which are much better. Right. So typically, let's say look at the fund management charges. The typical fund management charges for a mutual fund, if it is actively managed, it's around 2%. Right. In the case of ULIPs, it is around 1.35%. That's the cap by IRDA. You cannot charge more than 1.35%. Right. And many other different benefits that are being brought in to ensure that ULIP becomes competitive and, you know, solves for the problems that financial planners have been talking about. Coming to child plans basically offer two large benefits because of which they become something which is relevant for a parent. The biggest benefit that you get is something called waiver of premium. What it does is that it ensures all future premiums or all future investments that you're supposed to make. So for example, if someone is investing, let's say 15,000 rupees a month, and let's say the total investment period that the investment needs to be done systematically is, let's say, 12 years. And 12 years amounts to around 180 months of investment. Right? And let's say that's around, the parent has planned 15,000 rupees to be paid every month. And let's say, unfortunately, if in the 15th month or let's say in the 16th month or 20th month, if the parent passes away, the breadwinning parent who's covered under the plan passes away, the insurance company will pay all the remaining premiums and ensure that the goal, you know, that the parent had planned for the child gets achieved.
You know, I think what you're saying is so important because from my limited understanding, this is the single most important feature. Why people should seriously perhaps think about child plans, because even if there is an eventuality in the event of the parent passing away, you not only get the sum assured, future premiums continue to be paid by the insurance company. And that, Amit, I want to get you on this as well. That, as I see it, is a major, major positive. Your thoughts?
So, I think for somebody who does not want to get into the intricacies of full-fledged financial planning, this is a good way to achieve that outcome, because we need to deal with the factor that the loss of life, if it happens, it's going to sabotage the entire financial goals that the family has set aside for the children or the other family members. However, if you are going deeper into a comprehensive financial planning exercise, you are actually taking a stock of all the loans that you have, all the liabilities that you have and all the financial goals that you have identified as a family, which are important for your family. So you would be looking at your home loan liability, you would be looking at your loss of life risk as well, and you would be looking at your loss of good health and earning capacity risks as well. So when you do a comprehensive financial planning, you would be tackling the whole insurance aspect at a family level, and then you will be tackling the whole investments aspect at a separate level.
Sure.
So going through the exercise and how, what methodology you adopt to achieve the result is the right way, and that will help you determine whether you go for this plan or you go for pure investment products.
Sure. I mean, that's point taken. So it's different strokes for different folks. I mean, I take the point that Amit is also making, that if there is the loss of life of the breadwinner of the family, then it's a massive event. Then you anyway need to overhaul or relook at all your investments and your liabilities. But coming back to child plans, sure. Now, this is clearly one positive. But do explain the costs to us, and maybe an illustration of typically how much will you have to start investing, how much goes as cost, what are the kind of funds in which this money is going to be invested. So all the basics.
Sure. So the thing is that with the recent plans that I was just talking about in terms of the new ULIPs that have come into place, there are absolutely no charges if you look at it. And it is comparable with a mutual fund in a very large aspect. I'll come to it one by one. So let's look at the commissions. There are no commissions in these products. So these are zero commission products.
Okay.
So whatever you invest is the amount that actually becomes units for you.
These are your smart ULIPs, so the ones that you buy online.
Yes.
Not through an agent or through a broker of any sort.
Yes. So these are online ULIPs, you are right. And these plans are available through multiple websites, and there are products that, let's say, around the leading insurance companies have now come up with. And what these plans do is that because they are going direct to the customer, there are no charges in these products. So there are no allocation charges, which are typically the commission that is paid to the distributor. That is zilch, there is zero. Apart from that, there are other charges that used to be in a traditional ULIP, which is sold through a bank or through an agent, which would be, let's say, a policy admin charge, or there could be charges which are, apart from that, multiple other charges that were being charged from the customer. All those charges are zero.
Okay.
Only thing that gets charged in the product is basically something called a mortality charge, which is basically the charge for the insurance cover that the parent is covered on.
Okay.
Now, interestingly, even that has been solved by insurance companies. So if you complete the entire maturity, right, there are
that
insurance...
That is, if the parent doesn't die, in simple language.
Yes, if a parent doesn't pass away and during that period, what happens is that there are insurance plans that now pay back all the mortality charges that were basically charged during the entire period.
Okay.
So that also is taken care of. From a fund management point of view, actually, it's something that these are all large business houses or large financial services companies that we are talking about. Maybe you're talking about Bajaj, or you're talking about an HDFC Life, or you're talking about any other company. So they have obviously very, very good fund management, which is comparable with a mutual fund.
In terms of returns, you're
In
saying?
Terms of returns, yes.
Okay.
So obviously that is a call that that a customer has to take. He can go and check. You can actually check the NAVs, and you can check the fund management of a ULIP as you can check similarly like you can check for a mutual fund.
Okay.
It's exactly the same. So you can go to a website like multiple websites that exist today where you can see the NAVs and you can see the fund performance, and those websites basically you can typically, like a money control, right? You can go to those kind of websites and check the fund performance and compare it.
So you can monitor how your investment is doing and whether
that
particular fund with that insurer, whether that's
Correct.
Doing well
Correct.
Or not. Amit, so a lot of arguments in favor of child plans, but now I also want to talk about what the mutual fund fraternity has to offer, because apart from plain vanilla funds, I think there are some products which have a child tag to them, even from mutual funds, right? How do you find them?
So, adding a child tag is purely psychological element. It's a marketing thing. So there are some good products in the mutual fund space also. If you look at the balanced or the hybrid schemes, which are more equity oriented, these products have given wonderful results. So I'll give you an example. HDFC Children's Gift Fund has given over 15% per annum over the period of last 10 years. HDFC Hybrid Equity Fund or ICICI Prudential Equity and Debt Fund, they've given over 14% per annum in last 10 plus years. So these products are good products. Their expense ratios are very low. Their exit is clearly easy after a year of a holding. And they have been giving a power of compounding to all the investors. So I think not just this, there could be other debt fund products if your goal is nearby. There could be government-backed fixed income products also that can be considered if your goal is nearby. So there are multiple options. I think we need to understand that tax efficiency, inflation beating returns, ability to exit when the product is not doing well, performance tracking, and the insurance element that we are covering for the loss of life of the earning member. If we can broadly put these five factors together and analyze any product that you are choosing, whether it's a child plan or a mutual fund or a combination of fixed income mutual funds and child plan, then we'll be able to make a good decision about how to pursue this financial goal.
Okay, so I'm going to just take up the point on tax that you mentioned and break that down further. And sort of this is something to consider, Mahavir, right? Because when it comes to mutual funds,
right.
I'm guessing even the sort of funds that Amit just spoke about, since they are mutual funds at the end of the day, long-term capital gains tax will apply?
Yes, of course. So all mutual funds, obviously, which are equity-linked, will attract the long-term capital gain tax, which is not the case for the ULIPs. There are no long-term capital gain tax, which basically, and typically it is a big point. The reason being that there is no indexation that is applied when the calculation of LTCG is done. So which means that there is no inflation calculated on the fund. And hence what it means is that the kind of money that you've invested and the kind of maturity amount that you get, the difference between that is going to get taxed completely at, let's say, around 10%. At a flat 10% is what it's going to get. Your 10% of your return is going to get shaved off on the day you withdraw this corpus.
Got it. So, Amit, you just listed out a whole set of options that are available. So, what's the perfect mix that you will keep in mind? I mean, maybe ULIPs or these child plans, they score over the fact that there is a waiver of premium, that's a big benefit, and the fact that they're more tax efficient from the LTCG standpoint. So what's the perfect mix that you will recommend?
I would keep a mix of a child plan as well as a hybrid mutual fund where the investor or the person who is doing financial planning for his child doesn't have to spend too much time in tracking a portfolio. And I would also add a set of debt funds for a near-term goal. So you see, the smart ULIPs are new in the market. So in the recent few years, they have come out and they are really coming across as a very good product in terms of costing and tax efficiency perspective. But we have to look at the performance over the period of over 6 and 7 years and see how these gains are comparable to the post-tax or the post-capital gains tax in the pure hybrid equity funds or pure equity large-cap multi-cap funds. So for me, a combination of Sukanya Samriddhi scheme, maybe PPF, maybe hybrid fund, maybe a child plan could be a good combination to begin with. And over the course of next 6 to 8 years, gradually eliminate the poor performers and keep adding more money to the good performers and achieve the financial goal.
Okay, that sounds quite a sensible approach. Would you agree, Mahavir? And how would you sort of create your pyramid or structure of products for the child?
Yeah, so more or less what Amit mentioned is not wrong. Obviously, you'll have to create a portfolio and it should have debt funds also. There are two aspects of this which Amit talked about, which I would like to talk about. Is one is that he spoke about the fund management being tracked for a multiple number of years. So there are plans which are being offered by insurance companies which have fund the fund performance for more than 7 years available. And today, if you look at it, we have some numbers that we pulled out on 3rd of November, which is like around 11 days back. And those kind of had a return of around between 12 to 14% on a 7 year period.
So Mahavir, please tell us the names of these fantastic sounding funds, because it's a complex world with insurance products, right? So tell us which child plans to choose within that, what funds to choose.
Right, so typically let's pick two of them just for the discussion. One is, let's say HDFC Life has a plan called Click2Wealth.
Okay.
Now this plan has a fund which is called the Opportunities Fund. Now the return that I'm seeing here on a 7 year period is around 13.7%.
Okay.
Right. Then the other product that typically is doing well is a plan from Bajaj Allianz.
Okay.
Bajaj Allianz Life has a plan which is basically called Future Gain. And this plan today, with if I look at the fund performance of a pure stock fund, which is one of the blue chip funds that they work on, is around 15.2%. This is on a 7-year horizon that I'm talking about. Obviously, if you take a higher horizon, it will be in a similar range.
Sure.
But these kind of returns are possible in a ULIP, ULIP fund as much as it is possible in a mutual fund. We don't basically, what I'm trying to say here is that the fund performance is comparable, obviously.
Yeah.
And it's not necessary that, you know, if, because it's a ULIP, the fund performance could be lower or a mutual fund could have a lower performance. You typically need to compare the performance and then take a call.
But
one of the things that you'd
I think you've really left us with a lot of interesting thoughts, because if you're getting that kind of fund performance with tax efficiency, with the waiver of premium benefit, then you really need to give these products a hard thought. Let's take final words then. Amit, any other advice, tips to parents overall on you know, getting their thought process right with respect to planning?
And so first thing is, thanks for sharing. The child plans are giving good returns. The funds they're using are giving returns which are more than 15%. People are looking for choices. So I think I want to highlight a key message that people should pick up products which are more than 12 to 14% per annum kind of returns, because that's what they need for such a massive accumulation of corpus. So they do enjoy choices, give them choices, and let the performance be tracked by third parties, and let it be an open-ended scheme so that if they want to exit, they can exit any time. Tax efficiency is massive in such products, so that's what we should take advantage of when we're planning for such goals.
Okay. All right, gentlemen. This has been a very interesting conversation and a very important, enriching one as well. Thank you very much, Mahavir, for sharing all the data and the details with us. Thank you, Amit, for joining in as well. We hope this has been fruitful for all our viewers. That's it on this week's podcast. You can catch the show at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesdays with repeats on Saturday and Sunday mornings only on CNBC TV 18. You can also find us on the CNBC TV 18 YouTube channel. Do send your feedback, comments, queries. Catch me on Twitter. My handle is at Surabhi Upadhyay. That's S-U-R-A-B-H-I-U-P-A-D-H-Y-A-Y. Don't forget to add the hashtag money. Catch you next week.